Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Jean Raspail's. The Camp of the Saints is a provocative political novel that uses satire and dystopian imagination to dramatize a sudden mass migration from the global south to France and, by extension, Western Europe. First published in the 1970s and long surrounded by controversy, the book is often discussed less as conventional literary fiction and more as a cultural artifact that reflects anxieties about borders, humanitarian ideals, media narratives, and the self-confidence of liberal democracies. The story follows multiple viewpoints, from political leaders and civil servants to activists, journalists, and ordinary citizens, as institutions face a crisis that tests their language, values, and Raspail frames events in stark, intentionally exaggerated terms, pushing moral arguments to extremes in order to interrogate what happens when compassion, guilt, and political paralysis collide. Readers typically approach it either as a warning tale or as a critique of how fear can be shaped into ideology, making it a text that invites debate about interpretation as much as plot. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a dystopian scenario built on a single shock event. The novel centers on a dramatic premise. A large flotilla of impoverished migrants sets out for France, becoming a moving symbol that forces every institution to take a stance. Raspail structures the narrative so that this one event ripples outward, exposing the fragility of political consensus and the limits of administrative competence. Instead of treating the voyage as a background detail, the book uses it as an accelerating countdown that compresses decision-making into a high-pressure moral theater. Different characters interpret the same facts through radically different frameworks, such as universal human rights, national sovereignty, religious duty, or political expediency. That clash of frameworks is the engine of the story. The dystopian quality is less about futuristic technology and more about a society that loses its ability to name problems honestly, set priorities, and act with legitimacy. As the flotilla approaches, authorities weigh optics against outcomes, and public discourse becomes a contest of slogans rather than plans. The result is a scenario that reads like a thought experiment. What if a democratic state confronted a crisis that was simultaneously humanitarian, political, and symbolic, and discovered that its procedural habits could not keep up with reality? Secondly, institutions under pressure, government, law, and public administration, a major focus of the book is how official systems respond when the scale of events overwhelms routine governance. Political leaders face competing incentives, avoid appearing cruel, avoid appearing weak, and avoid taking responsibility for consequences. Raspail depicts a chain of deferrals in which ministries, courts, and bureaucracies search for language that justifies inaction or transfers accountability. The story pays attention to the mechanics of modern statecraft, including committees, statements, emergency powers, and the fear of reputational damage. This attention to process shows how legality and legitimacy can diverge during extraordinary moments. Even when rules exist, officials may hesitate to enforce them if enforcement is likely to be condemned by the press or by international opinion. The book also highlights the moral fatigue of public servants who sense that no option will satisfy the ideals their society claims to hold. In this depiction, the crisis becomes a mirror for a deeper issue, a state that has lost confidence in its right to govern itself. Whether a reader agrees or disagrees with the novel's worldview, the institutional portrait raises enduring questions about democratic decision-making, crisis management, and the political cost of appearing indecisive. Thirdly, media, intellectuals, and the battle to control meaning, Raspail devotes significant narrative energy to the role of media and cultural elites in shaping public perception. Rather than treating journalism as a neutral transmitter of facts, the novel presents it as an arena where moral framing determines what actions are acceptable. Terms, images, and emotional cues become tools that can mobilize compassion, guilt, outrage, or denial. In this vision, the conflict is not only at sea or at the border, but also inside headlines, televised debates, and public rituals of solidarity. The book portrays intellectuals and activists as competing to define the correct moral posture, sometimes with little attention to second-order effects. This theme emphasizes how modern politics can be driven by narratives that reward purity and spectacle over pragmatic solutions. The story suggests that once a society accepts a particular framing, it becomes difficult to revise it without appearing hypocritical or cruel. The result is a feedback loop. Officials respond to media pressures, media amplifies official hesitations, and the public absorbs a simplified moral script. Readers can use this section of the novel to think critically about the ethics of persuasion, the incentives of attention-driven platforms, and the gap between symbolic gestures and workable policy, even if they reject the book's ideological conclusions. Fourthly, moral psychology, compassion, guilt, fear, and paralysis. Beyond political institutions, the novel explores the emotional currents that influence collective behavior. Characters act from compassion, guilt about history, fear of disorder, and anxiety about identity, often holding several feelings at once. Raspail dramatizes how moral ideals can be weaponized against a society that cannot reconcile its self-image with harsh trade-offs. The narrative repeatedly returns to the question of whether a community can protect itself without betraying its professed values and what happens when leaders treat moral clarity as more dangerous than moral compromise. The story also portrays citizens who feel unheard, watching elite discourse dismiss their concerns as immoral or irrational. That perceived dismissal deepens polarization and reduces trust, making coordinated action harder. In this sense, the book is not only about an external movement of people, but also about internal fragmentation. It depicts a culture that has trouble defending boundaries because it is uncertain which boundaries are legitimate to defend. Readers may interpret this as a critique of humanitarian universalism, or, alternatively, as a warning about how fear and scapegoating can be rationalized through grand narratives. Either way, the moral psychology is central. The plot advances through hesitation, shame, moral posturing, and the dread of being judged, rather than through straightforward strategic choices. Lastly, Allegory and Controversy: How to Read the Novel as a Cultural Artifact. The Camp of the Saints has remained controversial for decades because many readers view its imagery and argument as inflammatory, while others defend it as a blunt satire meant to provoke debate. This makes the book's reception part of its significance. As an allegory, the flotilla functions less as a realistic depiction of migration and more as a symbolic stress test of Western self-understanding. The novel's tone is deliberately extreme, amplifying the rhetoric of decline, moral exhaustion, and civilizational insecurity. That extremity invites two different reading strategies. One is literal, treating the story as a prediction or warning about demographic and political change. The other is diagnostic, treating it as evidence of a particular ideological moment and a particular way of converting anxiety into narrative. The book is also useful for discussing the ethics of dystopian fiction when an author uses caricature to make a point. How should readers separate craft from argument and satire from endorsement? Approaching it critically means asking what the novel assumes about human nature, power, and cultural continuity, and where those assumptions align or clash with empirical reality. Its lasting impact comes from its ability to spark polarized interpretations, making it a case study in how literature can become a political object. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want to engage with a highly charged political novel as a lens on European cultural debates, not as a neutral guide to immigration or policy. Students of modern French literature, political satire, and 20th century ideological history will find it particularly useful, as will readers interested in how dystopian narratives shape public imagination. The benefit to a reader's life comes from sharpening critical thinking. It encourages you to examine how moral language influences decision-making, how institutions behave under reputational pressure, and how fear and compassion can be leveraged in mass politics. Even when you disagree with the book's outlook, the act of reading it alongside other perspectives can strengthen your ability to detect framing, propaganda, and rhetorical shortcuts. Compared with similar dystopian or political novels, this one is worth buying for its singular cultural footprint and its concentrated focus on narrative pressure points, media dynamics, administrative paralysis, and the struggle to define legitimacy during crisis. Many political thrillers prioritize action, but this novel prioritizes the collapse of consensus, which is precisely what makes it enduringly discussable. Readers should approach it with context, caution, and a willingness to analyze rather than simply absorb. If you would like to support Jean Raspail, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.